The following program may contain content that your kids would love to hear, but you may not want them to.
Now, I want to talk to you because you're obviously upset.
Permission is granted.
Glad I met you. I'm glad I met you, James.
I was not considering the fact that I, in fact, am the third man, capital T, capital D, capital M. But I am.
I want to show you something.
Let's take off all our clothes.
And maybe that's true. And that's what I said.
That's the how we used to sing it. I'm sorry. This is the way we used to sing it. It's the way you should sing it from now on.
But look at this. What is this?
I hate to put a negative spin on this because it's great to drink and everyone loves to drink.
They say you should not drink alcohol when it's so hot.
And I've talked about this too in the past when I talked about soccer moms.
That was so good.
No, I didn't talk about soccer moms.
Excuse me for saying it. It's not even my place to say it.
I'll talk about soccer moms who became roller derby moms. And don't...
It was the old stuff.
And don't you think I haven't stopped. I have given up on the roller derby thing. Let's just get Pi Kim on the phone.
Wait. Where are the phones?
They took the phones. Huh?
We're not using Skype. Tonight, today, this afternoon.
You're such a hero. You're so rich. How come you're coming down here and waste your time with such a bunch of bums?
But let's not get into that. Let's not talk about me. Even though it is all about me. Let's not talk about me. Let's talk about Nancy.
What did I learn as a kid on Western? You don't sell a guy one car.
But I believe that, you know, we could have a lot more fun. I'm not trying to be politically correct here either.
So I don't know, do I?
Let me have your attention for a moment.
Do what you got to do if you're a neo-postmodernist, and I know you are.
What is that?
Look, just go. Jay, the best thing to do is to just Google the gal.
Let's talk about something important.
I really am when it comes to this thing.
Let's talk about something important.
Just a whole nother angle just took place in my head.
Put that coffee down.
But let's forget about drugs and medicine. Let's talk about sex.
Have you made your decision for Christ?
That's going to be happening. I got some things to cover before we get there. Dirty Things Get Stiff by Frank Cotolo.
It may mean something to you. It may not. I don't know. I don't know anymore.
Does that mean that if you dirty things get stiff?
Secure the template. Set the backside guide to appropriate locks and basket. The backside guide tabs include setting the jig. Possessing the template. What the hell am I reading?
Serious Shake that thing.
Good God!
Work it. Work it. Shake that thing.
Cotolo, Cotolo. Cotolo Chronicles.
Of the Godfather, and the Godson, and the Holy God, are we back here again next week? Let's get something like Godfather of Internet Radio. Who's the Godson of Internet Radio? Who cares? Here we are again. I'm the Bard of Broadcasting. That's even more important and not important at all. I'm the third man. I'm the king of the web. I'm the Bard of the interweb and the difficult historian. But most of all, I'm the vegetable man. The name is Frank Atoll. The man whose name is joined the title of the show. Stick with us because there's some really good things that they tell me. Ice cap to ice cap, from Hamlet to City, from Othello and into every bordello. I no longer have a macaroni necklace. Ooh, he's digging deep into the annals of the annals. Into the, it's the barium enema of radio shows. Radio. Call it radio. I don't know. No false laughter tonight. It's January, and every January I pretty much fall into the abyss of a dark and deep, disturbing. So the laughs you hear are wicked. But my name is Frank Atoll. I'm the man whose name adorns the title of the show, and I am the Bard of Broadcasting. So here I am. It's the new year. You know that. See that, how that Brooklyn comes out? You know that. And because of many, many things that go through my head many, many times at many, many miles a second, a minosecond, a nanosecond. How do you count seconds? Well, you count them after firsts. I don't know. I think I'm going to leave right now. No, come on. You know, think about it. Think about this for a second, okay? If you just turned this show on for the first time, or if not, you know one thing, you're going to turn on a radio or a podcast or what else is there? You know, or the regular junk that people who never wanted to be on the internet now want to do, whether they live stream it or you got your local station or you got your dumb other station or whatever it is or Joseph Prince, you know, or Benny Hinn or anyone you want. They're all going to tell you, I know what's going on. Aren't I feeling great? Isn't this just wonderful how we can get together like this? You know, that's what they're going to tell you. Okay. And then you're going to come here, and even on a good night, it's miserable here because all we do is tell you the things, talk about the things that no one else talks about. And you have to leave here thinking, why, all sorts of stuff, you know?
And it doesn't, for years, I did radio. Did radio? Tell me, I performed, produced, whatever it is. I worked in radio. That's what worked in radio. It wasn't work. I played in radio for years. And it was always, you know, in a format that was, don't want to give you anything heavy to think about. And God rest his soul, that's what he said. We're not giving you anything heavy to think about. But every chance I got, I stuck something heavy in there, but made it funny. And then it was disguised, see. And now these days, that stuff is not disguised. And the thing that irks me the most, if I can get irked, the thing that irks me the most is that they all think they know it all. And you know me, I name names here and there, and I hear it, and I can't listen to them, whether they're on television or on the radio, but you know, they're on the radio and make me sick. So I don't listen, see? And then I do this show, and you know, I'm not affected by them because I, all these voices, I don't have anything to do with them, and I'm not going to listen to them. Okay? And I'm not wasting my time. I'm an active, not a passive person. All right? And I don't need somebody else to tell me they know it all. That, my friends, is what gets you a knuckle sandwich. Which is violence, of course, it makes me violent. And although that might be a psychological problem, so the best thing to do is stay away from it. Right? And it's not because, it's not negative or positive. I can listen to anything negative or positive. I mean, just, I like balanced, you know? And we inject and have injected from the beginning of this series, this never ending series called Cthulhu Chronicles, right? Injected misery into it and yet covered up the horrible things that have happened during the time in the world and personally. So there. So then I get onto this microphone and I'm start doing this and I can't help but think, no one's doing this. I'm doing this. They're not doing this. The other ones are not doing that. And what it makes me not want to do it, see. But then I realize, then I see great mail that I get and I get email. I guess it's email. And I don't get real mail, but I kept telling people through the years, just send letters to Frank Cthulhu, care of Grantville, Pennsylvania, and it would get you. Because, the post office is almost smaller than this. You can't see it, so it doesn't matter. So they don't send that mail. You know, it's all email, fcthulhu@yahoo.com. You can write to me anyway. And I do. And then people say, hey, that was great. This was great. I heard it on the rebound. I didn't hear it live, but I heard it on the rebound. And then the new year comes along and I'm going, I'm here. I'll do it. But, and then, you know, just when I'm about to just say, to heck with it. They do wonderful things at, 148.ca. NSRN Media Works, who, you know, keep this show going with their servers and bandwidth and all that. And I say, oh wow, so great. So just when I'm thinking, well, you know, I'm going to go down there and I'm going to be miserable tonight. And then I realize that, well, you know, there's a lot of people out there who want to hear the misery. They want to hear the misery. They want to hear the bumbling. They want to hear what they don't hear from all the ones who say they know everything. I've never, ever have I gotten in front of this mic and said, I know it all. In fact, always I get in front and I go, what do I know? I just come up with these suppositions, these theories, these ideas and concepts, and I spit them out there shamelessly. And then I get people sometimes who come on the show, voices, authors, psychics, doctors, lawyers, whatever, and they get pissed off because I'm not playing radio. I never came here to play radio, okay? I don't need to play radio as most of them do. I came here to open up this portal that no one else seems to want to go through. And now, slate it, 2019. Oh my God. And I react to it. I don't tighten my tie. I don't put on my, I'm not a white empty suit. White? What'd be white? And I'm here. And I listen to those who care to listen and tell me, and those who appreciate it. That's my audience. Okay? So they know, and they know that I come here through thick, through thin. I come here sad. I come here happy. I come here joyous. I come here low. I come here high. And when I can't come here, something's wrong. And that's what happened last year. During 2018, we had a lot of problems. Technically, we had a lot of problems with weather and all sorts of junk. But now, we've actually upgraded. We're going through a higher speed interweb connection here, and it's going to another place. If you went to CotoloChronicles.blogspot.com, you see the new link. That's, you click that and any device will listen to this show and any other show that's on SRM MediaWorks. And if you don't hear this show live and you want to hear it on your own convenience, we've got that covered too. Go over to JuicedTalk.com. The artist D keeps that in order and the, you can hear it there. Other stations, go there, pick up the show and repeat it. I said repeat it and repeat it. It's repeat, not repeat, repeat. And so it's all covered. Download it, listen to it on the other stations, listen to it live, whatever you want to do, it's all there. Okay? And I continue as the third man. See, that's why I'm the third man. If you get to see the movie The Third Man, if you ever saw the movie The Third Man, you might understand why I do that. Call myself that also. There's not enough names for me. Believe me. I know. I've been called them all, aside from the ones I call myself. But in any event, in all events, and certainly in this event, let me tell you that I listen to people. Now, someone emailed me and said, didn't you have a movie star, a daughter's movie star, a daughter's movie star? No, the daughter of a movie star on a while back. And I went, well, yeah, I've had people related to movie stars and some professional people and Oscar winners or Emmy winners and, you know, and that wasn't enough information. And then what they did was what you should do, go to CotoloChronicles.blogspot.com and start scrolling and look way back, go far back as you want, as far back as it goes. And you'll see what was going on that week. And if I have that show, I can play that portion. So I don't play the whole thing. That would just be a repeat. But I'm here. And I'm here live. And I'm live on the archive tape. And live on the other stations. And live on True Talk. And some other places. So I eventually the person wrote back. I said, what? Give me a clue, you know, wrote back and said, yeah, you know, it was, they recently saw a movie, an old movie on TCM, Turner Classic Movies. Why do I say both? I don't have to say both. You either know what it means or doesn't. Why do people do that? Why do I do that? In journalism, you do that so that you can abbreviate from there on out. I would have said Turner Classic Movies, a parens, TCM. That way, every time I said TCM, you'd know what it meant. Little trick there for you journalism students, if you happen to be listening. Or paying attention. Or caring. Or anybody who cares. So, they saw this movie about Robin Hood. I immediately knew what this person was talking about. The star of Robin Hood. I think it is the original one. I don't think there was a silent Robin Hood. It was a 1939 version, a color movie in 1939. Oh, no. Wait, I don't know if they colorized that or was it in color. No, I think it was in color. Great music, great cast, great everything. And the star of that was a man named Errol Flynn. Errol Flynn. Now, this is going back for you millennials who have to really look this one up, like this person did. You know, this is one of the good things I think I do on this show, whether I talk about it miserable or happy. And that is that I introduce people, younger people, to some great classic things, just like TCM. But, you know, if you don't go there, if you don't go there and watch it, you don't know what you like or what you're missing. But when you're guided there by people like me, you say like, hey, ever read this book? Blah, blah, blah. Have you ever seen this? Blah, blah, blah. All this stuff that can go on for you younger people don't know it exists and know that it does exist, not just on television, probably on YouTube and Netscape and Netflix and Hulu and all the places that have movies and things. My gosh, it's a plethora of media out there. So if I say, hey, and I did say at this one point, The Adventures of Robin Hood is, you know, something you should all see. True legend, Robin Hood, okay? So don't get into me with this legend stuff, as I often do. So I said, yes, of course, Errol Flynn. I had Rory Flynn on the show. Now, I just said that. I said, I'll look for it. So then the person was so interested that the person emailed me back again. Back again? Emailed me back, not back again. That would mean they emailed me twice. Emailed me again. And said, don't look for it. I went to CotoloChronicles.blogspot.com. I found the date. It was in April of 2007. Rory Flynn. So I went and lo and behold, which is something I really don't say in my real life. Lo and behold. Sounds like WC fans. Lo and behold. Hey, that's not half bad. My voice is still so high. I'm so old and my voice is still so high. How could you be a tenor at this age? I hope everything else is working the same at that level, you know, at that capacity, at that intensity. So I said, okay, what I'm going to do is I'm going to find a way to put together some other stuff and perhaps most of the interview with Rory Flynn. Now, it was based on a book, and I don't know if the book is out, but maybe while you, listen to it, then look it up on Amazon if the book is still out that she wrote about. But we're also going to talk about it because I knew a lot about Errol Flynn only through my film history and my youth, my film history, college stuff that I did with communications. And everything, and then, you know, in Hollywood, knowing people who knew people who knew people, and it goes back a couple of generations, before you know it, I knew things. I didn't know. Some of it, you know, it's some of it that really blew some bubbles open, but this is the true stuff going on with Rory Flynn, and she's a daughter, the youngest daughter of Errol Flynn, and who died at a terribly young age. It just goes to show you what happens when you live a fast and furious life. So we're going to do that. Back then, I guess I would say, but first this, and we go, hey, it's your shorts after your shorts and the shorts and the short stops shorts or whatever. So I'm going to do that. What I have to do first though, while we talk, is I have to cue it up because I couldn't do that before because this is the actual show that it was on, and I have to find 24:30 is the time she managed to stop at 24:29. That's perfect. And I'm going to do that. First, I'm going to tell you a couple of things, and those things have to do, of course, with buying books. Thank you for those of you who went to Amazon, Lulu.com, and blurb.com and bought digital versions of my book, which can be now purchased there. You sent them out there, links out there for gifts. And you know, I found someone brought to my attention today that if you Google my name, I now get one of those right-handed, right column pictures, and it says Cotolo author. And I don't know if they're linked anywhere because I don't have, I guess people are waiting to go to Wikipedia and maybe start, I can't do it, start a Cotolo page, but Frank Cotolo page, but it's there. It says, and that was a shock to me. Someone said, hey, you know, you're, I don't have it. That's what they said. And I didn't understand. I was like, you're saying that again. And they went, you got a right-hand page, just like Timothy Reiser. Who's Timothy Reiser? I don't know. Tim, just like Tim O'Leary. Yeah, good. just like Marlon Brando, you know, the whole deal. But I don't have as, it's not as, full. It's not as busy. It's just me and it just says author. I don't know where it links to what have you. But I was shocked to even have that there. And, so it's right. I am an author. It's correct. And, you can go to Amazon. Look up my name. I got a page there. And Lulu.com. You can go to Lulu.com and I got a page there. And at blurb.com. The digital ones are the cheaper ones. And everyone reads digital now anyway. You can also get Craig Lehner's book for young adults. It was never about basketball. There's a title for you. There's a book for you. Young adults. It's a great gift. It's still a great gift as we move into 2019, even as these kids get older. And Craig is, he was here a couple of weeks ago. And we'll be back, I imagine. Also, Dr. Woldar is going to come back. We're just not going to get very heavy because he's such a very, very busy man. But I heard from him, too. I want to reach out and say, hi, Doc. I hope you're feeling better. He had some eye problems and not ego problems. He had some medical issues and he took care of it. And still very busy, very busy guy. But he's not busy enough that he won't come on and just talk about the old days. That he wants to do, whatever you want to do, we'll do it. Gary Popoli, who we have not heard from. I mean, I haven't heard back from Gary. And some other people here and there. You know, we'll see what we could do for 2019. Y2K plus 19. Right here on Cotolo Chronicles. I am the man whose name adorns the title of the show. Here's what we're going to do. First, let me do this little thing. In case you don't know, where is it? I'm going to do this little piece. It's a 2-minute piece on the death of Errol Flynn. Tell you a little bit about him if you don't know. Listen, kids. I call you kids. What can I tell you? Because I have kids your age. I have kids your age, right. And you know, we get along fine. You guys get along fine. We'll get along fine. We're in good shape. Let's play this little thing here that has to do with the death of Errol Flynn. And then, exclusively from 2007, Rory Flynn, the daughter of this man. Let's do this and then come back. Yeah. Okay, the death of Errol Flynn. Weird. That was weird. Okay, go.
Flynn, in financial difficulties, flew to Vancouver, British Columbia on October 9, 1959 to negotiate the lease of his yacht Zaka to the businessman George Caldo. As Caldo was driving Flynn and Odland, who had accompanied him on the trip, to the airport on October 14 for a Los Angeles-bound flight, Flynn began complaining of severe pain in his back and legs. Caldo transported him to the residence of a doctor, Grant Gould, who noted that Flynn had considerable difficulty negotiating the building's stairway. Gould, assuming that the pain was due to degenerative disc disease and spinal osteoarthritis, administered 50 milligrams of Demerol intravenously. As Flynn's discomfort diminished, he reminisced at great length about his past experiences to those present. He refused a drink when offered it. Gould then performed a leg massage in the apartment's bedroom and advised Flynn to rest there before resuming his journey. Flynn responded that he felt ever so much better. After 20 minutes, Odland checked on Flynn and discovered him unresponsive. Despite immediate emergency medical treatment from Gould and a swift transfer by ambulance to Vancouver General Hospital, he did not regain consciousness and was pronounced dead that evening. The coroner's report noted the cause of death as myocardial infarction with a comorbidity of cirrhosis of the liver. Both of Flynn's parents survived him, as did his estranged third wife, Patrice Wymore, and his four children. He is buried at Forest Lawn Memorial Park Cemetery in Glendale, California.
You know, that's called the Reaper Files, I think, right? And they do it with that weird computer voice. I guess anybody can do that, right? You got all these new apps and stuff. It says, yeah, thanks for watching. Yeah, I got it. What is it? Check out the other video. No, I don't want to check out the other ones. Okay, that was a little something about the death of Errol Flynn. The day of the death of Errol Flynn. Cirrhosis of the liver, of course. Well, that's, you know, that's a lot of drinking to get. Although, I don't know this. I'm not a doctor. Don't play one on television. And don't, and again, I don't know anything. At least not as much as most people know. So, or most people say they know. So I can't tell you if people get cirrhosis without drinking. I'm sure they do. I mean, alcohol. I mean, heavy drinking. But Mr. Flynn, and they didn't say, they didn't say he was 50. But I think Rory will tell you the rest. Rory has a book. Let's see. I don't remember the book. But you'll learn a lot more here right now. Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to do that. Here's, I'm going to play this Rory Flynn thing. There's enough. We sold books, blah, blah, blah. You know, the other books there. The artist, he has books. Anybody connected to this show that had a book, go look on Amazon. Couldn't even say it straight. Look on Amazon. 20 dwarves doing handstands on the carpet. 20 dwarves doing handstands on the carpet. One hen, two duck. I already did it wrong. On two, I got it wrong. Okay, let's go back to Cthulhu Chronicles 2007. Rory Flynn talking about her father, Errol Flynn, and which is all in her book with pictures and what have you. And then I'll come back. Come back. Where am I going? I'll be around. And we'll see where we are at that point. My name is Frank Cthulhu, man whose name adorns the title of the show. This is Cthulhu Chronicles, Y2K plus 19. Now getting into the Wayback Machine. Remember them? Who remembers that? Mr. Peabody. And what was the kid's name? Wilbur? I don't know. Here's me. Here is me from then on Cthulhu Chronicles.
Oh, it's so good.
Y2K plus 7. And it's time, of course, to start this conversation. Rory Flynn, we're going to learn about her. Her father, Errol Flynn. Errol Flynn. NN. I'm only saying this. I'm not saying this because because so many people who listen to this program will know of and heard of and have seen Errol Flynn movies and even movies about Errol Flynn. There was one. We'll talk about that later. But those who don't, we're hoping to introduce to you, see, the two kinds of people in the world, over 50 and under 50. And those of you under 50, we're hoping to introduce to you something that something. I shouldn't say something. Well, an entire world. You know, every once in a while, this always happened to me. It's always happened to me in my life. I would find something new, a new singer, a new actor, a new book, a new author, a new painter, whatever it was. And you would find one thing associated with that artist, that performer. And that would open up. That would open up a gate, a floodgate, I guess. You could call it a floodgate because what's going to come out is a flood. Just a munificent amount of new to you, fresh entertainment, education, an entire world based on one particular new person in your entertainment vocabulary, in the lexicon. And then think about it. Sit back and think about. Think about the first time you ever saw or heard this person or that person, whoever they might be that you like, love, or are at least attracted to, not necessarily bemused from by. Is it a would you be bemused fry or be from or be fry? Fry would be from and by together. So you think about that. Then what opens up is an enormity. I like that, even though I don't think I've used it correctly. An enormity. And can enormity be a noun? He said to the wide open, like somebody's going to answer, right? There's no one here anymore, friends. It's just me and you. Don't you see how personal this is? Cthulhu Chronicles. I am chronicling. And this is why, another reason why this Rory Flynn, who is, she's part of the whole content industry. I mean, she's in the mainstream, you know?
and still yet, an independent and somebody who's put together fabulous book that is an entirely new look at a man who has a scorched reputation. And a fast liver and a young dyer. Is that it? Young living, fast dying. Young dying, fast. He was a high drinking, fast living, young dying, drinking, dying, whatever it is. You know what I'm saying? So where does legend end and reality begin? Let's find out right now, talking to somebody who is flesh of the flesh of a man by the name of Errol Flynn. Let's go to you-know-who, Rory Flynn, waiting for us right now in Hollywood, California, on Cotolo Chronicles. My name is Frank Cotolo. I'm the man whose name is doing the title of the program. And I'm calling right now, Miss... Uh-oh. Okay, let me see. Trying to be sure that I have it, that I have the phone call right, you know.
Hello?
Dialing a phone and talking at the same time, it's not an easy thing to do, Ms. Flynn.
Well, those are the trials and tribulations of the 21st century, right?
The vicissitudes of this technological world that takes us in. But you know what's great about it? It allows you to be on a program like this and allows hundreds of thousands, if not tens, of people to be enjoying what we're going to talk about. Good evening, and how are you?
Oh, Frank, I'm fine, thank you. How are you? It's a pleasure to be on your show.
It is. You have no idea what a pleasure it is for you to, for me to have you on my show. But if you'd like, I'll write a 100-page essay.
That's okay.
And tell you.
I leave the essays to my son.
I've been telling people because, and I'll just set this up for you so that you get an idea of this. When we talk about this, I never take for granted that everybody knows what I'm talking about, because in this world of ours, now there are so many people who are new to the world, the analog world that came before all the digital contraptions, right?
Right.
And so it is possible that we will be introducing your father to many people. And I was just telling everybody how wonderful it is in a life, in anybody's life, when they find a new artist, a performer, an actor, or whatever it is no matter how old that person is or whatever era they come from, how wonderful that is, because it opens up a floodgates of a whole world of things that that you did not know exist, and it's all new.
Exactly. It's just the idea that we can introduce, young people to the American classics.
That's right. They are classics. Your father, Errol Flynn. And I know I'll speak for some people who, are at least of my age. But I mean, I grew up watching the movies on television. Your father's. Why don't you start by telling everyone a little bit about, in general, even if it sounds like, everyone should know it,
Who Errol Flynn is?
Who is Errol Flynn?
Well, he's one of our classic actors. I mean, I would imagine one of, from the golden age of movies, starting with bringing Jack Warner Brothers, into a very famous light with his movies Captain Blood and Robin Hood and Charge of the Light Brigade. And my dad played many heroes, in that era, he played Cat Custard, he played Don Juan, he played, so many different roles.
When he's reintroduced, you see, we're reintroducing him to to the digital era. He was reintroduced to me, as I said, through the television era, because that was a whole nother, right? Because the movie started playing on television after all those years.
That's right.
And that's
I think that's when I saw most of his films on television. I remember being very young and not even really going to the theater. I was just too young to go to the theater to see those big films, but it's really wonderful to ever get a chance to see them on the big screen. There's nothing like that. There's a place here in L.A. called the Alex Theater. It's in Pasadena. It's one of the oldest theaters around. And it's just it's so amazing to see it on a big screen, to see Robin Hood have him come to life, you know, on a big screen. So.
Now, The Adventures of Robin Hood, this is one of the movies a lot of you people might know. And there have been so many remakes of of Robin Hood.
There certainly have, all the way up to Men in Tights, right?
Yeah, right, the Mel Brooks thing. But
yeah, there have been a lot, but I don't think anybody's ever outdone my dad as far as that Robin Hood goes. Even Kevin Costner said that he didn't plan on touching.
That was horrible. I'm sorry. I have to say that as a reviewer, as a person, I'll say it. You don't have to say anything. I mean, whose idea was it to get a guy like Kevin Costner to play?
Well, in the very beginning, who did they pick for Robin Hood to begin with?
Before?
It was James Cagney. That was their first choice.
You're joking. I didn't know that.
Yeah, that was their
they
first choice.
They wanted James Cagney?
James Cagney as Robin Hood? Well, somebody else imagined him.
Because he was such a name. They were just thinking names, Warner Brothers, at that time.
Yeah, and also he was very athletic, very talented. He was very short, but he was still one of their top stars, so why not give him the part?
Well, we don't know what the real Robin Hood looked like.
We don't,
right? And if there even was, there was a Robin of Locksley, wasn't there? Was it Robin of Locksley?
It was Robin of Locksley.
And there must have been a real one, but we have no idea what he looked like. But still, the romanticism of it brought to light incredibly by your dad, for sure. And that's the one that's indelible for me. And in fact,
I've never heard anybody say they didn't like that Robin Hood. Of course, they wouldn't say that to me, maybe, but I've never heard anybody say that. Oh, no, that wasn't very good.
Yeah, so, I think it would be difficult to find somebody who didn't like it for any what reason. But again, there's something that opens up in it. That movie alone, if you've never seen Errol Flynn, this movie alone opens up an entire world, because not just because your father, I guess most people, if they have heard of him, are going to think of the what word? Swashbuckler. That's what they're going to hear. So that's really what a lot of people are going to hear. We'll talk about the other stuff later, because I think he was a marvelous actor, and he played so many other parts that didn't have anything to do with costume roles.
That's true, but he did do I guess with his swashbuckling roles that was a majority. But think how many times he was a cowboy. I mean, honestly, he's got about seven films he did as a cowboy.
Yes, that's right. Errol Flynn as a cowboy that's a whole other experience.
It is.
But when you watch The Adventures of Robin Hood, you don't just see him. The supporting cast is tremendous. And if you don't know some of these people, then, it opens up that entire world.
See, he did, how many films with Olivia de Havilland? I guess they were a real team, eight films together they did.
Well, before we get into any of that stuff, let's just mention, I'm going to mention the book again. I've been mentioning it, and I have a link to it on the blog and everything. So we have The Baron of Mulholland. I know, of course, having been a California city, Los Angeles resident for many years at one time, I certainly know of Mulholland Drive. Is that where you guys lived?
That's where we lived. That's where my father built his house in Hollywood.
Now, when did he build that house? Is that the same house he was in for as long as you remember? Not you remember, but I mean for as long as...
Well, yeah, he was there, really. This was his bachelor home up in the hills where nobody could find him, on 11 acres overlooking Warner Brothers, actually, overlooking all of the valley. And he built that home very Australian style. It was sort of a ranch. We had horses and everything. There was a lamb. We had a monkey on the... He used to bring home animals from the set, that he liked.
He used to bring home
and
animals.
We had a couple horses, as I said, and a pony. And he loved animals. That was one thing my dad really taught us kids, is how to care for and love animals. And we've carried that through our entire life. Yeah, and also, the name The Baron is something, was a nickname that a lot of people called my dad, and the famous director Raoul Walsh was the one who nicknamed him that. And I think it's because he actually wore a very English kind of ascots once in a while and dinner smoking jacket.
The smoking jacket,
He liked the elegance of his home and, you know, he loved to have dinners. It was a very European sort of, you know, style of living where, you know, you had long dinners at the dinner table with the family. And
something royal about it.
Well, there's just, it was just something the way that he liked to conduct his home, you know. And it wasn't always that way, obviously. When it was a bachelor pad, it wasn't quite that way. When my mom moved in and he made it a home and built more bedrooms onto it, and, you know, it became a family home.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where I was born and raised, and I was there till I was about 7 years old. And my sister was nine.
Okay, let's go through the family. So you were there, you said, until you were seven?
Until I was about seven, yeah.
Okay, so give us the direct family. Who are you guys? Is you?
Well, my mother was Nora Eddington, and she was his second wife. His first wife was Lily DeMita. She was a very famous French actress. And when they met, she was pretty much, you know, she was on her way over here to make films. And she was very beautiful. They met, married, had a very stormy relationship, and had a son, my brother, Sean. And he was 7 years older than me. And then my mother, the second wife, he met my mother. And they stayed married for about 8 years. And she had two children, myself and my sister, Deirdre.
Deirdre, you see. Is that
Deirdre.
It? Deirdre?
And okay. Then my father married Pat Wymore, his last wife that he was married to, and had a daughter, my other sister, Arnella. So there were four what we call legitimate children in the family.
Yeah.
And
well.
and he was married three times. And but, you know, when we were raised, when he was with my mom, we had Sean come every summer to stay with us on the farm there.
Mm-hmm.
So it was the three kids that stayed there during the summer. He was being raised in Miami by his mother, but she felt he always should have his father around or a man. You know, she was very French, and she didn't believe in a woman raising a boy, a single mother.
Is that a very French thing?
It's very French.
She
put him in boarding school because of it, in a military school because of it. She did not, they're very... Yeah, it's very customary.
I don't know why that strikes me as something. There's something new right there.
No, yeah.
French women don't like to raise their sons.
No, not alone.
Alone, okay. Okay.
It's not a single mother.
There's not a single mother.
If she had a daughter, maybe she would have, but a boy, she felt, needed men around to give them the right balance, which makes sense.
Yeah, that's one more reason I think I'm going to like French women.
All right. Well, anyway, my brother would come for the summers, and we'd all just have, you know, a wonderful time. My dad was really into being a dad, and in those days, they certainly didn't have the paparazzi around like they do now.
What days are these?
Was afforded a private life. You know?
What are we talking about? Give us the years we're talking about here that you guys are like 70.
These are, you know... Yeah. In the late 40s, and all the through the 50s, they didn't really have that paparazzi the way they do now, obviously. You know, if the interview was conducted, it was conducted by, who were those two famous women, Hedda Hopper and her rival, there was another woman. Those were the interviews that were conducted by two sort of Hollywood celebrity interviewers. But not like today, the paparazzi that would have flooded his house at another time to get personal pictures.
No, well, that's an Italian thing, right? We all saw La Dolce Vita. Wasn't it La Dolce Vita which started that, documenting?
Probably.
Documenting paparazzi?
No, I think money starts it all.
Huh?
Tabloids, all that stuff, it becomes that.
Well, there were tabloids. There were tabloids back then, but they were in league with the publicity departments in the studio system those days.
It seems like that. Sometimes they stepped out of line, but...
Most of the times, they were controlled by the publicity departments.
Right.
I mean, and there was stuff that, I mean, look, I mean, that's what kept Rock Hudson a secret all those years.
That's
right. You know?
So, you know, the pictures that you see of my parents are out dancing at the, you know, it's all designated places, you know, where photographers are, where they're looking for pictures.
Right.
Or, you know, so they didn't invade your privacy in those days. They didn't come running up to your house, you know. So, consequently, there was you know, there were, we had a lot of wonderful family times where, you know, my father had the privacy that he needed and took advantage of that. You know, on our property, we had a swimming pool. As I said, it was like a little small ranch. Uh-huh. We had the tennis courts there, and it was pretty much self-contained. We didn't really have to wander.
So, you know, I've asked daughters and sons of other celebrities the same question, and so I have to ask you, because everybody asks the same question to everybody who is a daughter or a son of a celebrity, and that is that how aware are you that your father is celebrated or a movie star or whatever? How aware are you when you're a kid and you're living up in this little ranch like kind of, you know what? It's almost a little world of its own, right? Up there on the hills. How aware are you that you're part of the whole world or that your father is special? What do you remember?
In my particular case, you can read about it in my book.
Yes. Yes.
In my particular case.
Tease them.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that initiated me into it was I was not aware at all that he was. I remember having a huge crush on Tony Curtis.
Mm-hmm.
I never even knew that my dad was a star until I went to a premiere with him.
Mm-hmm.
And we went to the Brahmins Chinese, and it was a red carpet affair.
Right.
And his friend David Niven was, his movie was My Man Godfrey.
Mm-hmm.
And my sister and I got out of the car, and everybody started screaming for my dad. And I remember kind of hiding behind him and going, oh my God. They're calling my dad.
Mm.
I, you know, all of a sudden it started to hit me, and I think I was around 9 years old then. So I'm a late bloomer.
Wow.
I mean, imagine, you know, the kids today, they all know, you know, a Madonna's child.
Sure, sure.
You know,
well, that's
dressing
what, yeah.
to the nines since she was 3 years old. But you know what I'm saying? We were not. We were really kept. And again, we didn't have the accessibility that we have today.
Right.
The DVDs and the TVs.
Right.
All of that stuff. We had a screening room in our house, and my dad would show us Abbott and Costello movies,
right.
cartoons, and that, you know, we'd bring the school kids up, and that's what we would watch. I don't even remember watching TV until I was, you know, like 11 years old.
But that was a normal thing for you to have a screening room.
Did
you realize that was something special? I mean, you know.
Well,
you
there was a couple of special things that he did. Like, there was one film that was put together with where he plays Robin Hood, and Bugs Bunny plays Robin Hood.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a cartoon. It's an animated cartoon, Bugs Bunny, and he's life-size with my dad. And Warner Brothers put this together with my dad, and it was just one of our favorites. You know, he brought that home for us.
You know, they originally wanted James Cagney to play Bugs Bunny. In that.
Well, that makes sense, no. No, I mean.
So, but didn't you know that was? Did you just think that was like? Oh yeah, we have a room. We have a little theater in the house here. Like, doesn't everybody? I mean, you're thinking like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, probably. I mean, I remember sitting on the big old couch with my grandmother, and she'd make popcorn, and we'd have all our friends. We'd be sitting on the floor and on the couch, and laughing, and you know, there was a couple really funny little stories. One of them being, you know, when we used to watch Abbott and Costello and this and that. My dad would trade films with Lou Costello. And one time, this is my mother told this story, that she, you know, they were in the kitchen and the kids were in the projector room and all of a sudden it got real quiet.
Mm-hmm.
Real quiet. She didn't hear anything. And they all kind of tiptoed in to see what was going on. And there was a porno movie on that had been exchanged accidentally for one of the cartoons. And it was exchanged somehow through those guys. Anyways, it was a very kind of, my mother loved telling that story. She says, the whole room was quiet.
You know, even that.
5 minutes. But we're little teeny kids. I mean, we're only like five, you know, and six. So.
And you have to remember that.
I don't remember it. So.
No, I mean, but you have to remember this this fact that in those days that was a that was almost contraband. I mean, you couldn't get those things.
They were trading between, you know, the actors would trade between.
Yeah, that was very difficult to get those things, but. So the things that you write about, where did you find out, since you were so young and you only knew your father until, what? How old were you when he died?
12.
Okay. So when it was time for you to start researching and writing, who did you go to get what I would imagine is the best source information of your father's life that would be in any book, right?
Just to tell you what I have done with my book. Uh-huh. There's been about 20 books written on my dad, and they've all been biographies of certain kinds. The writings of Errol Flynn, the films of Errol Flynn, on and on and on. The biography, his own autobiography, which can then never be beaten, My Wicked, Wicked Ways, is one of the best autobiographies ever written.
Yeah, fabulous.
Why would I even attempt to write something on his life or even want to waste my time doing
it? Well, I'd have my opinions on that, but go ahead. Tell me about what...
First of all, I wasn't there during his, and either were most of these other people, by the way, there during his life. It's all hearsay, these stories and this and that. But what I do know is what I know, which is what my memories of growing up with my dad. And that's all I've written about are my memories with my dad, those 12 years of my life that I spent with him until he died. Now, what I've also done is I've taken his letters to my mother, his love letters, and I have reproduced those in his handwriting, so that you can see that you should be able to determine who the man is yourself through his own writing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not trying to tell anybody who my father was. All I'm trying to do is give another little window into his heart. And his heart involved his family,
That's what I'm going
to
love.
Something that was private. And as I say, I'm just adding another window to the many, many windows that have been lit. In his honor. And I also made this sort of what I like to call a family scrapbook, because I did the same with my brother. My brother has been missing, let's say, since 1970 in Cambodia, and he was a photojournalist. And the section that I put on my brother is also his letters from Vietnam. And it's in his writing, and you get to know Sean through his own letters. And that's how you get to know my father, is through his letters, not through anything I'm telling you except for my memory.
Right. There must be I guess there still is no way out of the historical reference. You're just saying that it all takes place in terms of your consciousness.
It's not only that. When I wrote this, I intended this to be for the fans. The fans who have read everything on my dad and wanted to know a little more and have waited for something from the family for a long time. And of course, there's been some horrible books written about my dad, too, which are total lies and a lot of sensationalism. And I decided I will never go that way.
Yeah,
and that's
really
why I self-published, because I didn't want to exploit anything, or which is what most publishers want you to do.
Well, when your father agreed to do what he did, to write a book and get in there, obviously he wanted to express the wild side, because publishers wanted to know about this. They wanted to know about that side of him, which was at that time it became highly publicized. He was willing to talk about it and write about it. And of course, he did come up with the title. He didn't. It's not the fairy tale life of Errol Flynn. He wrote it, right?
Well, my father was really, I would say, he was really a writer. He wrote two novels before he wrote My Wicked, Wicked Ways. But the fact is, that's his life, and he gets to talk about it. When you have somebody telling you who your father is, and they've never met him, and
absolutely,
only reading papers, documents, and they write a book, make a lot of money off of it, they've never even met my father.
I totally agree. I'm just saying that he did not run from that side of himself, and when he did his autobiography, it was his choice and his agreement to call it My Wicked, Wicked Ways, not my happy sunshine days.
I'd like to say that out of all of the most wonderful films that he's made, his life was still more exciting than the films that he made. That's the interesting part about my dad, is that he really never had a boring moment in his life. He was married to the most, beautiful women. He had many lovers. He spent millions of dollars. He died broke. He lived like most men would dream to live. Besides his films, his life was so amazing.
Live fast and die young. That was a very a common thing in that rare community of Hollywood. back
what,
then.
What, to die young?
Live fast and die young. I mean, that was a lot
It's true. But, yeah. You know, that generation were mainly alcoholics. And, you know, they really were abusive, you know, themselves. And, yeah, it's a different world. Yeah, we're living longer today. And I imagine we can hold out longer.
I remember watching... And I know this exactly because I have these kind of memories and these kind of memories always, connect themselves with various, people who I didn't know, like actors, like, you know, like your father and stuff. But I remember on Saturday night at the movies, NBC had back in the 60s, and they would show these first run movies from 20th Century Fox. I don't know why they'd gotten all these movies from the 50s. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I remember seeing, because I was starting to get into Hemingway at the time, and I remember seeing The Sun Also Rises. Mm-hmm. And I remember watching it because I said, you know what? There's a movie on tonight. I remember saying this, and I was, 17, 16. There's a movie on tonight with Tyrone Power and Errol Flynn in the same movie. Can you believe this?
Yeah. Like, well, that was one of his best films.
And
at that point, there was a consideration for a Best Supporting Actor nomination. And he was very excited about that because he never really believed, as far as I know, that he never really believed that his peers respected him. He knew he had millions of fans,
right.
He wanted his peers to respect him. And the fact that there was a possibility of a nomination really, really made him happy. Unfortunately, it was pulled, and I think it had a lot to do with the young girl that he was seeing that was underage. I think that he was really proud of the fact that he was going to be nominated for this.
But what struck me about that, when I did some research and when I saw it, was that him and Tyrone Power, who was, I don't think he was much older than your dad. He was younger, wasn't he?
Not really, not too much. He was a little younger, a little bit.
But in that movie, they both looked very old. By comparison to what I remember, you know, growing up watching your father as Captain Blood, as the Seahawk, and there they are, and these guys looked like, wow, I mean, they looked so old, and this is what I meant about live hard, and die young.
Yeah, I know, he didn't do anything like Raging Bull, you know, he didn't have to gain weight and get bloated.
Right.
You know, he didn't have to do any of that. He was there, and it was just a couple years later that he died.
The miles, the life, the stress, the passion, and everything it's all on their faces. And I had to tell everybody to go see that movie. I don't know how much longer even Tyrone Power lived. Cause, I mean, he knew he had problems, Tyrone Power. And
he died the same, was the same year.
Because they told him.
They, like, die in threes. I think he was...
My dad used to say that all the time.
I know. I used to always say that. I remember, like, three of them going. It was Tyrone Power.
I just never knew. Where does the three end? In other words, you know when it starts. No one's been, like, yesterday, Kurt Vonnegut died.
I know.
Now, so you're sitting around, and there's these urban legends and these things that go on in your head, right? And you're sitting around, and you're going, so who's next, you know? And, and then what? And then there's three? What if there's four? If there's four, does that mean the fourth one is the beginning of the next three?
That's right. No, there has to be a big break in between, I think.
Well, I don't know. What if there isn't? Anyway, not to get off the track. although you know they are all dead. It is fascinating to watch anything, and now that a lot of these movies are restored and they look so wonderful. And I know what you're talking about because when I was in Hollywood, and this is already 20 something years ago, but we used to love to go. So there were certain theaters where you could see prints, and this is even before the digital technology was fixing these prints up and any of this digital cosmetics began. You would be able to go and see the most wonderful prints of movies in state of the art. And you're absolutely correct. We are missing something when we watch any one of those movies, if we can't see them in full regalia, 35mm.
Really get captured when you see it full screen, absolutely.
Because it is not just the state of the art. It goes to, you could see how it was constructed and how it was meant to be big. And you know what really bothers me is people are now, younger people, are so spoiled with how CGI computer generated images have taken over the special effects, you know.
Right.
I mean, they look, let's face it, they look great. They outdo anything that's ever done. But I think it's a shame when kids see an older movie and they say, oh, it looks so fake. You know, it's like, it's a shame that they don't put in context. Let's like just talk about the ship fights. I mean, in the Seahawk. Those are wonderful things. Wonderful. They're wonderful miniatures and everything. And, you know, some of them were big or what have you. But I mean, the way it was done is fabulous. And it was all real done. That's really done. That was really done. Those are real three-dimensional things.
Yeah.
And it has in itself another, it just has another flavor and atmosphere. It doesn't look fake. It just looks so, it just doesn't look that real.
Yeah.
And I think there's a shame. I think it's a shame not only the kids can't appreciate that, but that they're looking at things so that today are too real, like high definition television. It's too real. It's more than real.
I know what you mean. They're also looking at smaller things too. You know, things are going smaller and smaller, and they can watch on a little DVD. They'll watch a movie,
which is,
you know?
Yes.
And like you're going, oh my God, how can you watch that movie on a TV, you know, on that small little screen, and they go, oh, it's okay, you know, they don't care.
Yes.
But, you know, and yes. Then the thrill of going to the movies, you know, is just, I remember just waiting for Saturday and my 25 cents, you know, to go to that movie to see that big screen. So I guess they don't need that kind of stuff anymore.
Well, people do go to the movies, and they've been going in record numbers by comparison to, you know, but it's just that the art form itself, because there's so much else, has changed, and because technology is just moving along.
My son's telling me how great 300 is, and I have to see it, and I'm going, look at all that blood and guts, I don't want to see it, but you got to see the animation and the...
Yeah,
it's so amazing.
It is. It's fascinating to be able to do a movie, and even that movie cost. Think about this for a second, okay? Even that movie cost $40 million, and it was done on a blue screen with, you know, all the CGI stuff.
Yeah, wow.
And yet, when you needed 300 extras, you know, in Warner Brothers, it also put people to work, for God's sake.
Yeah,
a lot more people to work than that. What do you know about what should we? Okay, first of all, where do we? We're going to talk some more here too. I just got to take a short ID break, and just tell us before we take the ID break, the best possible way to get the book.
Ah, well, there's two ways to get my book right now. First of all, you can go to Amazon.com. You can read the reviews. You can also go to my website. You can purchase it from my website, and that's www.inlikeflynn.com.
INLIKEFLYNN.
.com. And you can also go right to the publisher, the publishing company, which is Exlibris. That's Xlibris. And that's Exlibris.com.
Rory Flynn is with us, you're listening to Cthulhu Chronicles. And What else can we talk about here? Because there's so much. My mind just rolls around when I talk to people like you. And this is why, you know, Chris Costello has been on this show a number of times. And there's just always so much more to talk about.
I know. She's a lovely lady.
Oh, I love her.
Yeah, she's just great. Well, you know, we can talk more about my book.
Well, I do want to talk more. I do want to talk more about your book, because I think what's fascinating to me, and I know what is fascinating to almost anybody, no matter how old they are, is the fact that you are in this. I mean, you're a very rare you're a very fortunate a person. Did you just grow up wanting anything?
Did I grow up what?
Wanting anything. I mean,
yes. I mean, people totally have the wrong idea of how I grew up.
Okay, give us the idea of how.
It's wonderful. You know, you get to 12 and it's fantasy life. And then after my dad died, you know, things weren't good at all. I mean, this of course, I don't go, you know, my mother was a single mother trying to raise two teenage girls, trying to work. The will wasn't probated for 14 years, so she never got anything to help.
14 years?
People fought over my father's
possessions.
Well,
who were these
possessions.
People? Who were fighting?
His last wife, who ended up with everything, and his lawyer, who ended up with a lot also.
Wow.
And people put in claims that my dad owed him money. It kept stopping, you know, the process of the will. Where was it processed? Was it in England? You know, it was very complicated.
Wow.
Was he a U.S. citizen? He was from Australia, but yet he had residency in England. He had property in Jamaica. So it was a complicated issue,
yeah.
But as it turned out, you know, my stepmother ended up with most everything that belonged to my dad. And her lawyer, and his lawyer that became her lawyer.
So this is extremely interesting now. So then could we talk about these wonderful, joyous, and special, in these special
so did
times.
Did I ever want anything? Yeah.
Yeah, this,
I wanted
okay.
a lot.
That's right.
We're working in a department store over Christmas, you know what I mean?
Wow,
you know,
so this comes to...
People think you have money, you know, but
yeah.
People fought over my dad's money. We never... My mother worked in a clothing store and, you know, supported two children.
Where did you go when this, where were you? And I don't mean to bring up, but hell, you know, this is what we're talking about here too. And we all know, but where were you when you discovered that your father passed away?
We were at home.
Okay. Now you were in the Mulholland house?
No, we had moved from there. I mean, I was 12.
Okay.
Now, you know, when my parents divorced, I was 7.
Okay, I see.
And
okay.
Then my mother remarried a very famous singer, a man called Dick Haymes.
Oh, you're
he
kidding!
He was her father for almost 4 years.
I didn't know that!
And then she became a single mother.
Wow.
And around the time I was 11 until, you know, that she was single and struggling and trying to make ends meet. My dad, of course, was helping her all that he could. And but when he died, everything was cut off, and we were pretty much left, you know, not what anybody thinks.
Wow.
How we were left, you know, we didn't have any money at that time for years, and my mother supported us as a single mom.
Okay, what did
she
do?
In those days, it was hard. You
what
know?
Did she do?
She worked in a clothing store in Beverly
wow.
Hills.
Wow.
And she went to work every morning and came home, and we went to school. And
where did you go to school? Did you go? You didn't go to Hollywood High, did you?
Yeah, I did. I went to Hollywood High.
Wow.
Graduated from Hollywood High.
Wow.
So, but it was basically because we were living in Beverly Hills before my dad died, and then after he died, we moved into Hollywood.
Mm.
So we...
Where did you live in Hollywood?
Down, you know, into a financial category that we could afford, you know, basically. But, you know, you have to think, two teenage daughters and a single mom, and she was doing it all. So it was, and we were on our own a lot, you know, and it was everything changed after my dad died.
No, it was that must have been pretty traumatic.
It was very traumatic.
Yeah. And then what
it changed again.
Yeah. What happened? So you grow, you come of age, so to speak. And then what happens to you?
Well, what happened to me was I was very lucky because I was born 6 foot tall, and
You were born six foot tall.
And by the time
that should have made the papers alone.
I know. By the time I was 16, I was that tall, and I was very tall and thin. And when I was 17, I just finished high school. I didn't know what I was going to do.
Mm-hmm.
I had no. You know, trade to go to. I could barely type. And a photographer took a picture of me, sent it to New York, and Ford's modeling agency brought me out and groomed me for 6 months and sent me out, and I became a model. And I worked the rest of my life in Paris and London and New York, and I had a great time until I was about, I guess I finished modeling around 27. I had about 10 good years of modeling. And then that became a whole different world. I was traveling, in way different circles. And I am hanging out with Salvador Dali and Andy Warhol, and it was a whole New York life where I had a whole new life. But you know, that's another book.
Well, being the fabulous interviewer that I am, I knew this, but I knew about your modeling. But I wanted to ask you so you get into that, and then we could talk a little bit about that. Because I went looking for pictures of you in the usual places. I know there must be in other places too to see you in your prime. Where can I find those? I mean, I saw some that said photos by Rory Flynn here.
Yeah.
Did you went?
Well, you know, now
you
we have gotten to the rest of my life.
Yeah.
I actually become a photographer.
Well, where are some of these pictures we could see of you when you were the hot stuff model?
Well, you know, I don't know how you would get them out. I have them all in my portfolio. You know, I have covers of La Ficielle and, you know, from Paris, uh-huh. and from London, and I worked 6 months in Milan. And
I have to wait for the next book.
I was all over the world. It was really great. It was the best. It was just a wonderful, wonderful experience. I mean, I became a completely different person than mm-hmm. what I would have been if I hadn't been 6 foot tall. I don't know, you know, but. It worked for me until a certain age, and then I lived in England for about 10 years through the
70s. Let me get this straight. Let me back up here for a second, Rory.
Okay.
Because I want to make this perfectly clear. Not everybody, for you girls who are listening, how old were you when you became the model? When you said,
I was 17.
Okay.
Now, I just have to say one thing. I was never a top model. You know, I worked a lot.
That's fine. Yeah, but what I'm going to say here makes a lot of sense, and that is that I don't think anybody who's out there is thinking, like, if you're a girl or you're just coming of age or what have you, and if you think that just because you're 6 foot tall, you could become a model, that's not true. Because you said before, Rory, you said, I was lucky to be 6 foot tall, and I became a model. Yeah, I know, but you were also, you also had a certain amount of, let us call it, attractiveness?
Well, yeah, I got.
It's not you were just 6 foot tall.
He wasn't. I have to tell you that in New York, I of course didn't work as well as I did in Europe, and I'll tell you why. Because in Europe, they actually are looking for a body. In New York, they're looking for a beautiful face and a body.
I know. I've been
now,
to New York.
I am not.
You're looking
beautiful.
For bodies.
I mean, I don't look like Gene Shrimpton or Twiggy or any. But I had. I could pass. I mean, I'm okay. You know, but. The fact is, in Europe, they actually want a body. They don't even care what you look like. They want, you were 6 foot tall. I was used all the time in Europe. Yeah.
So you're saying
when you say they call you a mannequin there, yeah. You are a mannequin. You know, it doesn't leave much room for brain growth, you know. I mean, it doesn't. But on the other hand, you have to know how to get around. You have to be independent. You have to be able to work the streets to go look for photographers. You have to be brave. That's sure, to go out there on your own and knock on doors and not even speak the language. I mean, you really do have to have gumption.
Well, if you're 6 foot tall and people are looking
that more than anything, gumption
bodies.
And a style, and if you don't have to be beautiful, that beautiful. I mean, you know, there's so many. Lauren Hutton is rather plain looking, but she had such, you know, panache that, you know, you had to work with her.
Well, yeah. I just didn't want anybody.
Not that I had finance, but I'm saying mine was strictly a physical feature that looked fantastic in clothes. And in Europe, they took that, and they didn't make it such an important thing for you to be beautiful.
Well, I know, but you could be 6 foot tall and not look fantastic in clothes either, you know.
Well, yeah, you're right. And I was also very, very thin. I mean, I actually was, you know, very thin and tall. So it worked for me, but I did have the advantage of being uniquely tall.
So I'm going to have to wait for the book to see those pictures. Is that it? The new book?
Well, yeah, because, you know, I'm not writing a book about me. The book, you know, yeah, you're going to have to wait.
What? So is that the next book? I mean, we haven't finished with this one.
No,
you're not going to write one?
Okay. It's not the next book, but, you know, basically, you know, my book is a photo memoir, you know.
Yes.
It has a lot to do with photographs because in the second part of my life, I became a photographer. And I worked all through Hollywood. And because of my fashion experience, I knew a lot about the camera and how to work with people. And I started working in films as a still photographer and as a portrait photographer. And consequently, that's a whole another world, but because of that, I was able to bring out all of my grandmother's old Polaroid pictures and enhance them and make them presentable in my book, you know, and retouch them. And, you know, I learned a lot about digital cameras and this and that, and that's why I have this, why I'm able to put this book together,
right.
You know, with these old photographs. And
you touched them up. You fixed them
up.
Yeah,
of course, because they're all old black and white. And, you know, I made it possible so that I could make this a photo memoir. So my photography is a big part of my book. Now, I went to Sri Lanka on a film one, and I took some beautiful pictures, and that's a book that I would like to put together, my whole experience on this film with these pictures in Sri Lanka. Mm-hmm. So I have sort of a photojournalistic
Good.
Eagerness,
yes.
You know, that I wish that I could have cultivated before I was too old to do all that, you know. But,
what does that mean?
Just another dream that I never got to. But,
what does that mean? I mean,
well, you know, somewhere along the line, I feel that my dad was some kind of a journalist. He would have loved to have written, you know, when he was one of these guys who actually, you know, he saw for himself wars and revolutions.
Right.
You know, he went to the Spanish War. He went into Cuba, and he, you know, he loved writing. He would have, I think he would have loved to have been a journalist.
Mm.
And somewhere in my, you know, genes, I would have loved to have worked for National Geographic as a photographer. And somewhere, and of course, my brother is gone just because of that.
Let's go back here for a second, because I do want to talk about that, because I remember a long time ago, didn't somebody try to exploit your brother in a movie called The Son of Captain Blood or something? Was it?
Once again, my brother, before he became a photojournalist for Time Life magazine and was working, you know, for them in Vietnam as a journalist, he had done some really bad films,
He did more than that?
And it was easy to do in those days.
Yes.
Of Captain Blood, you know, The Mark of Zorro, you know, and they used him because he was so beautiful, so handsome.
Yeah,
you couldn't believe how wonderfully looking he was. And he was Errol Flynn's son.
Right.
So it's easy to exploit that. He tried it. He did about 7 films.
Did he do that many?
Yeah, he did.
Wow.
He did a couple in Germany, did one in France. Now, my brother was brought up with his mother speaking French. He spoke French.
Mm-hmm.
And he got around. Let's put it that way. And so in Europe, they made those really bad, like the spaghetti westerns. It was those times.
Spaghetti stuff.
And bad Italian movies, and then he realized he didn't want to be an actor. He tried it, and then he moved on to photojournalism, you know, and that's...
So he was working for Time Life when he went to Vietnam?
Yes.
And he was covering the war?
He was working for... First he started with Perry Matz, then he worked for Time Life, then he worked for UPI. He was always covering the war. He ended up speaking Vietnamese very well. He lived there 6 years.
Well, they would know French. I mean, the French were there before us, so the French was
a very...
They
know French, but he learned the language. He traveled, he camped out there, he lived in Vietnam basically for 6 years covering this war until he got captured.
Now you're saying that he got captured?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
There's a documentary footage of it, so...
And then that was it? Never seen again?
Never seen again.
Wow.
By the Khmer Rouge.
Cambodia. Oh, that was the worst people to get caught by it back then. Yeah. Because that was the secret hidden war that nobody wanted you to know about.
That's right. He was photographing, the planes going into, Nixon was sending those planes into bombing Cambodia, and he was photographing that.
Oh, my God.
He got captured right on the line there with another photographer. They were never seen again, but there was about 20 photographers from all over the world that were...
Sure. You know, now I get it. It wasn't like...
He was in captivity for about a year before he was killed.
So, I mean, is it because he didn't disappear, because he never came back that you know? How do you know he was in captivity for a year before they killed him?
A wonderful BBC documentary done by his closest friend, Tim Page, who was a war correspondent and was in Vietnam with him, did not get captured.
Uh-huh.
But Tim has been searching for Sean alongside myself for all these years, you know, but he got the BBC to do this little documentary where he goes into Cambodia along the trail my brother took. He talks to the people. They recognized him. They went to the place where he was held for 6 months. The girls that were feeding him that were 9 are now like 35, right?
Yeah.
And they remember a tattoo that he had that nobody knew he had. I mean, it was a very emotional documentary because it was very obvious that he was... No one looked like my brother, and they remembered him. He was the tall, beautiful, Errol Flynn-looking guy that held in captivity. There was only one like him there. And they covered it pretty well up until the very end when where they said that he started a hunger strike. He'd had enough, and they took them out in the killing fields and killed them.
Yeah, they weren't...
People that went along with the hunger strike, and they killed all three of them. And that was what we heard. We've never found any bones. We never found any remains. And, you know, they say they're looking all the time. I don't know why they're looking now.
Well, they have found you know, houses filled of bones that, from the Khmer Rouge. That's all the heck they knew how to, that's what they knew how to do best, unfortunately. They know. They didn't even know the value of prisoners, but let's not get into that.
Yeah, right.
That's
right.
A whole other thing, you know. But it is a curious sidebar.
It is, and this particular my book is in honor of my brother. I mean, he's well loved over there. He died for his job of informing people of what was going on, and he's a hero in my eyes.
I'm
honoring him as much as I can with his letters and his photos that he took that were never published are in my book. And people that have asked about my brother and this and that, I've gotten many letters saying, you know, thank you for that chapter. I always wondered what happened to him, or I was in Vietnam, and, you know, I'm really interested in knowing what he thought and felt. And there it is, letters in his hand.
And he's the only boy. He's the only son, correct?
Yes.
Okay. And your sisters?
My sister's son Luke is now 30, and my son is now 17. His name is Sean. I named him after my brother.
I saw his picture.
Yeah. My son is an actor. He's on a show called Zoe 101. It's a Nickelodeon show. He's been on that show for, they're going into their fourth season.
I think my son watched that. Isn't that something? I've never looked at the credits because
His girlfriend, he plays the lead, and the girl is Britney Spears' sister, Jamie Lynn Spears. And so all the tweenies know him very well.
Mm-hmm.
All of the 12-year-olds recognize him on the street. But, and he's 17 now. He's been on the show since he was 13.
Wow!
And Luke is a model. He's 30 now, but he's been working since he was, you know, 12 years old. His father's a photographer, and he started with the Tommy Hilfiger account. And he's just one of these models, Ralph Lauren, that will work forever. You know, he's very lucky.
When you want to have a personal moment. You have all these, obviously have all these pictures, and you have all these, and whatever memories you have and stuff, but, I mean, I wish, even though I know my father would have been a terrible actor, I wish that I could, you know, just take out a DVD now or something, and just put it in, you know, and watch him perform.
I do all the time.
Which can't be. And that's what I'm saying. So that's a great thing, and it's a special thing that, you know, not a lot of people have. Even though now you could make movies, you could do whatever you want, you can take pictures, and, you know, home movies is not like what it used to be. Even now, only a certain amount of people can go pick up watch their dad or their mom.
Oh, I know.
In such a thing. What do you do? What do you do? Is there one movie that you just sit back and you go, I want to spend some time with my dad and what he did and what he was and the essence of him? What do you want?
It's like, I'm going to spend some time with my dad. Mm. Now, you know, this new box that has come out, of course, you know, I have all the old VHS ones that are so bad, and I don't even have a VHS anymore.
Wow.
But now that the DVDs have come out, and speaking of also, you know, I just wanted to mention The Sun Also Rises is on the Hemingway box set. I think it's MGM that put it out.
Is that the Hemingway box set?
The Hemingway box set.
Oh, so it has...
And also Rises is a brand new DVD on there.
It has all the
and
Hemingway.
In the meantime, my father's second box set came out, Signature. And
Signature just came out, didn't it?
And it's just beautiful. DVDs are unbelievably beautiful. So I was just going to sit and watch The Charge of Life again, one of my favorite films. And, of course, you know, I just love that film. And I haven't seen it in a long time. So I try to do the ones I haven't seen in a long time.
Yeah, those people, Ronald Reagan's in that, isn't it? Ronald Reagan.
Life Brigade, no. He's in Santa Fe Trail.
Oh, that's right. Are you sure he's not in Charge of Life Brigade either? No, he's not.
No, that's the movie. He plays Custer in the Charge of Life Brigade.
No, I know your father does, but I'm trying to think of that's Santa Fe Trail? Isn't Ronald Reagan with Custer when he's early on in the movie?
I don't know. I'm going to go watch it right now. I'll tell you after I see it.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Well, you know, there's a few Who else is in that? Remember the...
Oh, you know who's in charge of the library? Nigel Bruce is in charge of the library.
There you go.
Remember Nigel Bruce? Write that down in your notebooks, friends. Nigel Bruce, because I've talked about him before, the quintessential Dr. Watson.
Ah.
Who just brought a whole new dimension to the part, stupidity.
But you know, my favorite film still is Gentleman Jim.
Is it? Gentleman Jim is a great,
I'm dying to show my son that. You know, luckily, I have this son that's only seen a few, you know, because he's so busy doing his own life. But once in a while, when I capture him, I can't wait to show him now on DVD, Gentleman Jim.
Gentleman Jim, about Jim Sullivan, the fighter, is a great
right.
picture, and it's a period piece, and it's kind of the Raging Bull of its time in a sense.
I would say so too. My father did all of his own boxing, and he was really very athletic.
They were royal boxers, so he was perfect for that part too, because not only did he have the physique, but he had the moves. You know, he used to stand. It was a whole different deal back then.
Hello. Uh-oh. We just lost her. Hello? We lost. We have to hold on a second here now, friends. We lost. Hello? Hello? We lost, we lost Sean. I was going to say Sean. We just lost. We had a bad connection. Let's try and call her again, see what happens. Rory, we lost you, Rory. Oh, that's loud. We lost Rory there for a second. Let's see. Let's see. Let's see if Rory's... Rory.
Gee, what happened?
I don't... Hello?
Are you there?
Are you there? Can you hear me? Can you hear me?
Hello?
Rory, we've lost... Isn't this funny? She can hear me.
Hello?
She can't hear me, and I can hear her. I got Rory Flynn on the phone here. Rory? Are you there?
Hello?
Oh, my goodness. We've lost Rory Flynn here, and that really should not happen.
Hello?
You've got a Tama Yaka Yaka Tama people here. We have a problem, and we can't call the Tama Yaka Yaka Tama people to fix the phone because the phone has just... Let's see if it's working here. Okay. That's terrible. That's terrible. That has never happened in all the years we have done phone interviews here. So maybe it's not the system, but in fact, a technical glitch. A lot of people tell me, they say, you know, why don't you just get that Skype thing? You know, well, if I had that Skype thing or some other type of phone contraption that has to do with software, I would not be able to get someone like Rory Flynn. So I have to take a chance with this digital analog connection that I have. Rory Flynn, I'm just having a great conversation, interrupted right there. And we're going to try it again because why give up? You know, let's see if we can get Rory right now. I don't know if this has to do with something particularly weird or what. Let's try it again. Let's see. Is she even there? I don't even have a dial tone now. I don't even have a dial tone. Okay, we have a massive phone problem right now. We could always have her on again. There's nothing I can do at this very moment because I have lost. Maybe let me let this sit here for 5 minutes. I don't know what that's gonna do. Because I'm not a technical wizard. But we have lost the... we could try her again. Let's see. Let's try it again. Let's turn this on. This, like you're watching me. Like you know what I'm talking about, right? Let's try it again here. Okay, let's try it again here, right? Okay. Let's see if we can get Rory again. Let's see. Let's see what the price is. I don't know. Let's see. Are we got you there, Rory?
Hi.
Are you
Hello?
There? Hello? Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Oh no. Oh no. It's lost.
Hello.
Hello. This is a great show. We didn't just listen to. Here's Rory Flynn saying hello, everyone. Let's listen to this. Here.
Hello.
There she is. That's Rory Flynn, daughter of Errol Flynn, trying to find me. Are you there?
Hello.
Hello. Hello. Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Hello. Hello. Hello. Hello. It's just not going to work. I don't know what something is wrong. Hello? Rory? Let's see. Let me try this. Hold on. Rory, can you hear me? Now I'm trying it this way. Listen to this. Rory, I'm getting... You know what I can do? I'm going to do something radical here. Because you know why? I'll tell you why I'm going to do something radical. Because I'm one of these guys on the spot. I'm Johnny on the spot here. Watch this. Let's see if this works. I'm going to talk in here. Put her on the speaker. Mm-hmm. Seven. Mm-hmm. Let's see. Let's put her on the speaker. Let's see. I put her on the speaker here now and see if we can get her.
Hello?
Hello. Can you hear me now?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can. I've had to rig up something else. I don't know what's going on. This is the first time this has happened. We've just had a little...
Well, you know what? We are having unbelievable winds here. I don't know if you've heard anything about it, but I mean, there's been, things have been knocked down, the trees are falling down.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, absolutely, and there's been fires, and today,
really?
It's just unbelievable. The whole house is just, so, and we do have some bad wires going on in L.A. right now.
Well, that might
be what it is.
Yeah, because I called you, and I heard you for a second, and I mean, I kept hearing you when I was talking, but you couldn't hear me.
I know. I tried to even star 69 you to get back on the line with you, but it wouldn't go through.
Isn't I? Well, here we are, and I guess we'll go for as long as we can go here now.
Okay.
It was just, and I have a just different rig up. I have a different rig here, and I'm going to hope this works by just attaching it this way, because I'm Johnny on the spot. I don't let these things get in my way. This has never happened.
That's good.
This is a wonderful system. Where were we? We were back to talking about the movie. We're talking about the movies again, because I want everybody to start going out and seeing these movies, and they can see them. They could rent them. They could buy the signature.
Right. We were talking about Gentleman Jim.
Gentleman Jim, right.
Custard. We haven't gotten to Don Juan, which, of course, is the film that my mother is in. The only film she was ever in with my dad.
It's called The Adventures of Don Juan, isn't it?
The Adventures of Don Juan, yes. You're
and it's,
right.
And it's a later, it's one of his later, it's 40, it's, what is it? Is it 40?
Yeah, it is later. I think it's like...
50 maybe, something.
Maybe, I think it's like 49 or something like that. And
okay.
It was one of the last swashbucklers and he felt he looked good in tights, I guess. So. I don't know. But anyways, there's a lot of just the films in this box set has quite a bit of variety involved here, and
The Seahawk, always one of my favorites.
Of course,
The Seahawk
that is a wonderful one. Do you remember? Have you seen that one?
Oh God, I've seen that so many times. That's sure, and that great Wolfgang music, right?
Yes.
He's the same guy who is that the music that opens up your website? Isn't from The Seahawk?
Yes.
Okay.
And I forgot what we... Oh, so then, we also have Dive Bomber.
Dive
Bomber, of course, with David Niven.
Yes, I'm sorry, with
Fred McMurray.
Right.
Then we have the Dawn Patrol that's with David Niven.
Yeah, there's a lot of Nazi fighting things, because he was too old to go to war, right? Oh, well, no, wait a second. He was in the army.
To go to war. It was one of those.
He was one of those guys in one of the movie stars in the...
My dad did a lot of war bond... You know, he went to did a lot of shows, but he was never, he actually had tuberculosis, my dad.
Did he?
And the studios never wanted, yeah, he did. He had malaria from his days in New Guinea.
Yeah, malaria.
He really was diagnosed with tuberculosis, and the studios decided to cover that up because they couldn't have a swashbuckling hero with tuberculosis.
Right.
But that's why the Army rejected him. And I have that in my book, and I have the letter.
But I remember seeing
it, you know, in there, that's how he was disqualified. But he tried to do his bit by, he'd have these, you know, parties where the soldiers would come up, and they'd participate in the parties that we had. He tried his best to be helpful in raising these war bonds.
Yeah, and in those movies. What was that other movie where they're in Canada and the Nazis are and it's in the cold? What was that? What was that movie?
North by Northwest or something?
No, he wasn't in North by Northwest.
I'm sorry.
What was the name of that one? You know what I'm talking
not
about.
North by Northwest. It's
him and I remember it because they're in the
Journey or
Nazis in the it wasn't Saskatchewan. No, that was Alan Ladd. It was something like that. It was it was one of those things, but there was a lot of those regular ones that were not swashbuckling, but they were swashbuckling in another way. I guess they buckled a different kind of swash in when they were doing, you know, spies and Nazis and cowboys and the cowboy movies, of course, which,
how they got away with that, I'll never know.
I know. It just, he's such,
you know,
a strange
cowboy. Even in some
cowboy.
Of them, you can hear his very, in the early ones, you can hear his very strong Australian accent.
Strange cowboy.
And then maybe that's why it worked, because people, you know, he really did have sort of an Australian, you know, ranting point of, you know, a persona about him. So maybe that's how he could get away with it. But he got away with it. With that cowboy thing, I was always amazed at that.
Well, they.
I mean, how many were there? There was Silver River.
I'm trying to think of the names.
There was Dodge City.
Dodge City was the other one.
There was Santa Fe Trail.
Yeah.
There was, I think he did like seven or eight of these. And always with Alexis Smith, you know, she became his cowgirl.
God, I met her once. I met her. Yeah, I was working at
lovely. Wasn't she? My mom said she was just really a wonderful lady.
She was, even when I saw her, that was in the early 70s, she was gorgeous then.
Yeah.
Wow.
She always had very nice things to say about my dad.
But,
I was working with him a lot.
And, did you ever know Olivia de Havilland?
Well, you know, I correspond with her.
Mm-hmm.
I still correspond with her all the time. She just had a big celebration out here, a big, the Academy honored her and invited everybody. We all came, and she was on stage for about 2 hours. She's 90 years old.
Yeah, I was just going to
say that. She was on stage for 2 hours, and most of that 2 hours she was talking about my father.
Well,
it was almost like my father being honored. It was amazing because, you know, they have overlooked him in that department, and they usually do when they have passed on. They don't really, you know, they're not going to do any ceremonies. But in this sense, she really did honor him, and I was, you know, she introduced us all, and we were just sort of all in tears, and she was so sweet about my dad. She really loved him, and she is just an amazing woman. How, you know, she walked on stage. I mean, she doesn't have anything wrong with her. She lives in France. Maybe that's the key.
You know, what is with France and longevity?
No vegetables, no pesticides, no...
Oh, yeah, right. Don't tell that to the Truffaut family.
Oh, yeah.
Longevity in France. I never heard of that one before. Well, you notice the wine. It's the wine. Just like, it's like Italy.
Yeah, right.
It's those antioxidants in the wine, I think, or something.
I don't think it's that. I think that they just don't ruin their food. I
mean, no, it's the smoking.
They don't inject them with hormones and
is that what it is? Don't they?
Preservatives, and the fruit is not sprayed.
They're too busy walking around looking for bodies, right? Tall bodies. That keeps them fit.
That's right. Well, she is in very good shape, and she's just a wonderful lady, and she's written her autobiography, too. So, you know, she's...
So she has?
She has.
Well, someone at 90, someone must have helped her with that.
But she did it a while ago, but I'm saying that...
I don't remember that.
Talk about my dad and that.
Is her sister still alive?
Who? Which one?
Joan. Joan Fontaine.
Oh, her sister, yeah. Her sister is still alive.
So they're the oldest...
I understand they still don't talk, you know.
Really? And that's his story. The only sisters ever to win Academy Awards.
And not talk,
right. Yeah. They're not the only sisters not to talk, though. There's plenty of them out there, I guess, aren't there? Then Joan must be pretty old, too. You there? Okay.
Yeah, she must.
I don't want to lose you. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Oh, okay. I want to make sure. I never.
Sorry.
What's going on out there in L.A.? What is there, storms? What's going on? Storms?
I don't know. There's some kind of wind thing. So
wind things going on.
Yeah, and we've never had these amazing strong winds. So, in any case, you know,
so Olivia was there, and she.
In LA, the weather's changing everywhere, isn't it? So
I don't know. Well, it's cold here. I keep waiting for spring. I mean, I she would talk about how many. I mean, she was. Why was she always the leading lady? I don't remember much of. Of your dad's book in terms of those things, but why did they always pair her up there?
Pardon me, why did he what?
Why was Olivia always paired up with your dad?
Well, you know, in those days, I think that's what they did. They paired people together, just like they did with Garbo and, you know, whoever she was with, Roland, what was his name? You know, they just paired people and kept them together and things.
But they didn't keep him and Betty Davis together too much. They weren't the best of friends.
What? You know, like when you think about Clark Gable, he did a few friends with a few films with Carol Lombard, even though he was married to her. But
that's right,
I guess they would find a match, and
Yeah.
These guys really matched, and they were both young, and they were both new on the screen.
That's so right,
put
yeah.
them together, and it worked. And I think, like, unlike today, when something works, they keep it.
Yeah.
Instead of changing it. You know, like, today it's working, and then they'll pull somebody out, and then the whole new
yeah.
show. You know, they didn't do that then. They said, this is working. Let's keep it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And, so the Cowboy...
I know that The Charge of the Life of Gay was the last film they did together, Olivia de Havilland. She tells a story in her book how she, in the last scene that they did, she was supposed to cry, and she was crying because she felt it was the last film that they were going to do together, and it turned out to be true.
Mm-hmm.
That was their eighth film together. So she was very attached to my dad, I think.
Mm-hmm. And
you know, it's like you grow up together. My son is the same age. He's been on this show since he was 13. All the kids have been on the show. They're like, they've watched each other grow up. They're like part of each other's life.
Yeah, sure.
You know, and it's only 4 years, so you can imagine 8 films together. You know, that's a big part, chunk of your youth right there.
Yeah, and that's a span of maybe 10 years, though, right?
Yeah,
which
yeah.
is a good, which is, you know, that outlasts, that's a lot of marriages don't last that long.
I know.
You know?
Yeah.
No less do they, do they still like each other? It's over.
You have the magic, right?
And who was I going to mention? Okay, I was going to say the I was trying to remember these dive bomber Nazi things because there were so many of those. And then the later ones, Don Juan. And then here's what I was going to ask you about, because recently I saw a TV made biography. And I don't know who the heck played your dad. I don't remember what the name of it was. Do you know? You know, you've seen that, right?
Probably.
You know, do you remember seeing? You mean to tell me you don't remember seeing a TV made movie?
On my father's book.
I don't know if it was on his book, but it must have been based on some of that. Of course, they made it into a, you know, it was a TV movie, and some guy, I don't even remember his name, played your dad.
So it must have been My Wicked, Wicked Ways. Because they made a really lousy movie of the week.
Oh, there you go. It must have been, maybe it was
years
that.
Ago. We're talking at least 10 years ago.
Wow, it's amazing. When you say years ago and you go 10 years, 10 years is nothing compared to years ago.
It was a long time. It was at least 10 years ago, right? But
I saw it on one of the cable channels, and I just couldn't get through it.
I mean, that is exactly why, you know, people don't watch TV, something like that. It, you know, the people that don't and don't want to take, you know, they'll hear somebody's biography and they're going to make a movie of the week. You already know it's going to be really bad.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
They just can't do something so, you know, intense like that in a movie of the week, you know, and expect to get... Anyways, it was very badly done.
Mm-hmm.
If it was ever to be done, it should be done as a feature. And we should have Kevin Kline play him. That's who
Kevin Kline did a great Douglas Fairbanks in the Chaplin movie with Robert Downey Jr. You've seen that, right?
You, my dad, so wonderful. And if I ever get one of my, I have a chapter that I'd really like to make into a little small feature, which is part of my book there. It's called The Last Dance. And Kevin Kline is playing my aging dad, kind of the Hollywood star with his 12-year-old daughter, you know, and this whole chapter is about this. And I've always thought Kevin Kline is the perfect.
Yeah.
Gene Errol Flynn, you know, somebody just before, you know, like in his mid-40s.
Sure. Although Kevin... Kevin's not aging as quickly as your dad.
That's for sure. Thank God for him.
Yeah, he doesn't live in that kind of life.
I still have time.
You know, it's fascinating. I was talking to a friend of mine recently, and I was saying, isn't it fascinating to look back at these pictures and realize that we've already, me and him and many other people from my generation, have already lived so much longer than them.
No.
That's fast. I mean, it is so wild to think it. In a way, it's like, you know, geez, we didn't live. We must have not lived at all.
You know, when I passed my father's age of dying, which I hate to admit, but I actually
now wait a second. He was only 50.
I know.
And he looked a lot older.
Only 50. But when I did pass that age, I went, oh my God, I can't even imagine dying at this age. I mean, it's like I only feel I'm halfway there. I can't even imagine how I could feel like I've lived a full life up to 50. So it did really strike me as, you know, how quickly those years went.
Now, in general, even people who did not live, even men especially, who did not live fast lives in those days still looked older than we do now, didn't they? You there?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
I agree with you.
I'm sorry to keep doing that. I'm just trying so hard, though. You have no idea what I've rigged up to try to get this thing.
Sure. Well, as I said before, I really feel that my dad was an exception as far as the kind of life that he lived.
Yeah, yeah.
He really, you know, he sailed all the oceans. He wrote best-selling books. You know,
he drank and smoked every minute of it, didn't he?
He lived just...
He's a great consumer.
His heart was living.
That's a consumer of life. What?
Yeah. He was an expert in the art of living.
Yeah, that's a wonderful way of putting it. Yeah, yeah, but it does pay. It has a toll.
I don't know. You know, who's to say that my life is any fuller because it's longer? I mean, it certainly isn't any fuller. But I mean,
well, you bring up a good point too.
It's better because it's longer. You know what I'm saying? Why not?
Yeah.
You know, come in. Shine and go out. I mean, who's to say what's the best?
Well, you know, the other thing is that not all of us can shine like that. Those are very special human beings who come in and they are not just good, not at what they do. Not, they're perfect for their time, and they come along at a time when it's just their time.
Well,
and that's your dad was that was it. I mean, regardless of how great he looked and how perfectly he fit and how well he acted, that was the right time for someone like him. There's so many people these days, and even in those days who couldn't, you know, fill those shoes.
Yeah, no, that's true. He was definitely unique. You know, he can, you know, with his background, I think it just brought all of, you know, his aggressive life force into play in the films. You know, it was a matter of, you know, his environment, his upbringing, and then bringing it to Hollywood. You know, because who's born in Hollywood? All these guys come to Hollywood to be famous.
Right, right. And he was...
So they all have history somewhere, but his certainly was exciting, you know, coming all the way from Tasmania.
Tasmania, yeah, I know, there's a...
Tasmania.
The original Tasmanian devil right there.
I can't wait to go to Tasmania. I plan on retiring and opening an Inn Like Flynn Inn in Tasmania.
Wow.
I would love to be the owner of a bar and a little pub and a bed and breakfast.
The country built upon a penal system.
I know. And it's also built upon a complete dock. I mean, what's it called? A bay. Hobart is for all the ships that come passing through. They stop there, have a drink, and then go on to Australia, go on to Sydney.
Yeah.
It's a harbor. It's a harbor of sailors.
But how are you ever going to get used to it?
Isn't it a harbor of sailors?
A harbor of sailors, that's right. How are you ever going to get used to, you know, wearing all those clothes in August?
I know. It might be horrible because it's so far, you know, it's the closest piece of land to Antarctica is Tasmania.
Yeah. Not a lot of people don't know that. I mean, a lot of people...
It's really cold when it gets cold. It must be really cold.
In August. Because it's all upside down.
You get tough people from there. Tough. Really tough.
Yeah, yeah. And slow.
So I'm kind of Australian.
It's very slow down under. People take their time.
Well, that's okay with me.
So what are you doing now?
Fine with that.
You're selling your book, and what are you doing? You're just raising a kid, and what are you doing?
Well, you know, you said it. That's what I'm doing. Right. I finished the book. And I was working on that for about 2 years. In the meantime, I'm like this mom that goes to the set with her son as he works.
Wow.
You know? And I used to be a photographer, and I kind of stopped doing that to help my son get through this show because he has to have a guardian on set and all that. And so in the meantime, I started writing this book. Now I'm just going to go promote it. I'm having a great time because, as I told you, I self-published.
Right.
It's very important for me to self-publish with the ways of sensationalism and exploitation out there. So I'm very selective. I'm being, you know, people are selective about me because I have a book that's what I would call the anti-dirt book. The anti-dirt book.
Okay. All sorts of problems out there in California at that time, huh? I'm telling you. I did look it up, and it is available for those of you interested. You must have heard of it. The Baron of Mulholland, A Daughter Remembers Errol Flynn. And it's available on your Amazon Books thing there by Rory Flynn. And that's that. Whatever. That's that. It was great. We should call her again one of these days. I don't know. Probably don't have the same number. Oh, boy. And yeah, it was fascinating because what California went through in 2018 and listen to that. Oh, that old Yokohama-Hamayoka connection. Boy, things have really changed. I didn't even have Skype then. You heard it. You know what was going on. That was 2007. My name is Frank Atola. The man whose name is going to title the show. One of these weeks, Jiggy Jaguar's coming because it's the beginning of the year, and that's kind of a tradition. They'll be on to talk about all sorts of other radio junk and stuff. In the meantime, good night, Mrs. Ernstwhile, wherever you may be located. We shall be seeing you one place or another. Take care of one another. Happy the New Year to you, and let's try and get through whatever we can and however we can. Okay. I didn't say much here, I was saying it on there, but right now I got nothing more to say.